The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Epchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change? Hello, everybody. Welcome. You might be listening live here in the Seattle area on 1150 AM KKNW, or perhaps anywhere around the world on transformationtalkradio.com, or perhaps on Facebook Live on my professional page or on TTR's professional page. But wherever and whenever you're joining us from today, we're grateful to have you here. And, you know, I know we ended up having some buffer of commercials. We were searching for our guest and want to make sure we had him in alignment here with us because it's a wonderful, important show. But you've just been inundated with this concept of the vibration of change. And I'm kind of glad you are, because we talk about it every single week in the intro, in the commercials, you hear about it. And I've taught a class called The Vibration of Change multiple times. And today on the Academy of Divine Knowledge, it's the launch date for the introduction to the vibration of change that I have taught. And it is a presentation that you can have access to if you get a subscription to the Academy of Divine Knowledge, which is filled with wonderful teachers. I'm really honored to be amongst them. And when we talk about the vibration of change, we kind of know it when we feel it, like we're in alignment, things are moving forward, things seem to be magically manifesting. But how do we get there? In this, I'm talking about how I used to be confused about how we manifest change, in that I had healed myself of cancer, and I talk a little bit about how I went about that years ago. And I thought, I've got it. You know, I know I've cracked the code about manifestation. And then fast forward a number of years, the first big healing I saw in my healing practice when I became a healer was somebody who didn't believe in the work, who, and I wasn't sure that I could do it. You know, I wasn't sure that I believed in it. And so in one case, I thought the conscious manifestation techniques rely so heavily on belief, right? And yet this healing had absolutely nothing to do with belief. What was it that unifies it? And at one point I downloaded this, I get with this big aha, what the unifying factor is, not only for all healing, but for all positive change. And that's how the vibration of change was born. And so up here on the Academy of Divine Knowledge, you're going to have access to, 45-minute introduction, a presentation that I've only done in front of live audiences before, where you'll learn what that magical sweet spot is. And there's just one simple question you can ask yourself about that can determine whether you're greasing the wheels of positive change or keeping yourself stuck. So if you're interested in creating positive change, either on an individual level and whatever it is you're trying to create in your life, or on a collective level, which is so important right now, we're getting into this with our guest in a minute, I encourage you to follow that link. And I know it's on the Facebook Live at this point as well. And it's on the homepage of my website. Okay. Enough of that, because I'm really excited to have our guest here today. You know, there's this wonderful new film out about the history of Gary David. And I had never heard this before. And it's this fascinating documentary that is both informative and inspiring. And it talks about creating global change in a unique way. And our guest today is the producer of the film, Arthur Kanigas. I hope that I'm pronouncing his name right. If not, he'll correct me in a moment here. He's the president of Future Wave Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to shifting our culture from a culture of violence to a culture of peace. He is the director and producer of this new film called The World Is My Country. And we're going to talk in detail about that, which is about the amazing adventures of this man I just mentioned, Gary David, world citizen number one. We're going to learn what that is in a minute. And prior to producing feature-length documentaries, he produced the award-winning short film of the same subject, One, The Gary Davis Story, and wrote an award-winning screenplay for a narrative feature as well. He's produced War Without Winners, which was narrated by Paul Newman. And he also did research for the 1983 TV special. I think it was a series called The Day After. And I don't know if you were watching TV back then. I think the whole world was watching, at least all of the United States. It was a big thing. Anyway, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Arthur Kanigas. And please tell me if I'm pronouncing your name right or not, Arthur.
You know, Christine, we're actually still tracking him down.
I thought you said you'd reached him.
Oh, yeah, I think we got him on the phone and he has the Zoom link. So I'm going to check in with Jessica and see where we're at with that.
Okay, so I've just introduced him and he's not here. Anyway, so let's go back to the vibration of change, because I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. You know, I've taught classes on conscious manifestation techniques, and if you're listening to this show, if you're on these stations, if you're following me on Facebook, you're probably well aware of some of the conscious manifestation techniques, such as the approach with a vision board. You know, you post up all these things that you want to create, or perhaps affirmations where you're stating what it is you want as though it's in the here and now, and with visualization that you can do within the context of meditation. Years ago, when I was facing cancer, when doctors didn't have anything to offer me at the early stages of this, which is sort of an unusual thing, I learned how to meditate and I learned about visualization. And with conscious visualization techniques, you know, you're visualizing what it is you want to create. And it's a sort of thing where you may think in terms of lots of details. And, you know, one of the things I've learned along the way is that you're much better off if you can sort of state on a high level what it is you want to create, instead of saying, oh, this is the detail. Like, let's say you're trying to manifest a new mate and you decide, oh, well, I want him to be at least this tall and have this color eyes and, you know, do this for work or whatever. Or you're trying to manifest, say, a particular job, and you think you know what job you want. And so it's like that job at this number of dollars, when the universe might have something far better to offer you. So one of the things I've learned is that it's helpful to get a higher level perspective and say, all right, well, you know, this is the way I want to feel in a relationship. And this is the kind of person, the values I want this person to have, or this is the way I want to feel when I go about my daily life at work. And this is the ease I want to have with financial abundance, the flow of my, and abundance within the context of my lifestyle, which may mean that you're going to get a totally different job, a totally different amount of dollars, and perhaps, you know, a different mate, you know, who's a little shorter and has different color eyes, whatever. So the conscious manifestation techniques are very helpful.
And hey, Christine, and just want to jump in here real quick and let you know that we've got Arthur here in the meeting.
Okay, great. I'm going to finish up this thought. Perfect. And so sometimes when we have come up with this concept of what it is we want to create, and we're doing a really good job with the manifestation techniques, but we're not bringing to us what it is we truly want that's connected with our heart, that's connected with our deepest desires, our soul desires, we think we might be doing something wrong. And we often think in terms of, I must not be in alignment with that particular thing that I want to manifest, or I've done something wrong with the manifestation techniques. And I have to tell you, there's often something different from both of those things that has nothing to do with the manifestation techniques that determine whether you're getting what you want to manifest or not. And that is what I call the vibration of change. So again, it's up on the Academy of Divine Knowledge launching today. If you register for that and you have access to all the different teachers, if you go to the top of my content, or all content, I think is what it is, you'll find your way. The top of that is the vibration of change introduction. Okay,
again, you know, I've already introduced our guest when I thought he was here. And I'm really excited because speaking of creating positive change and being in that vibration of change, I want to have this conversation about how we create this global change of into peace. And Arthur, I first of all want to know if I'm pronouncing your name last name correctly. Is it Kanigas? Can you correct me here?
Arthur Kanigas.
Kanigas. Okay, I got it wrong.
And I'm so thrilled to hear you talking about conscious manifestation and how do we want to feel in the world? And so often we focus on that on the individual level, as we of course should. Every one of us has our individual lives. But what do we want to manifest as a planet? What do we want to manifest with our fellow human beings in the world? And, you know, years ago, I worked on a film called The Day After about the devastating effects of nuclear war. And I was the nuclear war researcher. I was going over to the Pentagon and researching what would the bomb damage effects be, you know, at ground zero, you know, 1 mile away, different places, so they could build the set. I'd have to fax the information out. It was before we had the internet. And they would build the sets based on this research. And I began to have nuclear war nightmares. You know, I found myself, you wake up from the nightmare and you couldn't shake it. It wasn't like there weren't really monsters under the bed, because there really were. And it was a really deep, devastating, primordial fear. And it was not just the fear, you know, maybe I'll be killed or my family will be killed or, you know, even all the people around me, but all life, all history, all art, all the incredible things that in nature and the animal species and the dogs and cats, all that incinerated in this insanity. And it was just like a deep primordial fear so great that it began to immobilize me.
And I have to tell you, as somebody who watched that series on TV, I think all of America was watching. It had incredibly high ratings. I think we all had those nightmares.
100 million people in the U.S., 200 million in the Soviet Union. I think, you know, Ronald Reagan credits it with making him, before he saw that, he said he was really believing his generals when they were telling him, you know, you can fight and win a nuclear war. We can beat the Soviets, you know, and they were egging him on. And he said, after that, no way. And he had to start strategic arms limitation talks. So that film did play an important role. But here it is, 75 years after the bomb, and we're still living under that nuclear threat. And when you check this back to conscious manifestation, after we showed that film, Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward came into my office. I also produced a spot with Paul Newman that ran immediately before the day after, immediately after the day after. It was called The Minute After the Day After. And he said, you know, it doesn't have to be the end. He touted a nuclear war prevention kit we had created. And it had all the different ways to lobby Congress and help to cut the nuclear spending and so on. And yet, we see that nuclear spending is going on like crazy. We see that a whole new generation of nuclear weapons coming out, and then other threats to the very existence in terms of climate change, of life on Earth. And what happened is that after we had the day after out, and it didn't stop the arms race, it made a dent, but things were still bad. I was meditating in Quaker meeting, and I began to settle back into that question of, you know, if what we visualize creates what we want, what is it we need to visualize? And I thought back to a song that we would sing as kids in Quaker school and in first day school. And it went, there's an ocean of darkness and I drowned in the night, till I came through the darkness to the ocean of light, and the light is forever, and the light makes us free. I will dwell in the glory of the light, said he. Walk in the light wherever you may be. It's the George Fox song, and it's sort of the founder of Quakerism. And, you know, I realized that at the exact same time that there's this overwhelming depth of darkness, you know, the ending to the end of humanity, and the deeper you look into it, first strike policies, the radiation burns, the victims already killed by nuclear tests, the deeper and deeper you go, the more you can just drown in that ocean of darkness. And then you start looking at global warming, and you look at the pandemic and the accidental escape of from the lab that's, you know, devastated people, and you can just drown in that darkness. And then, you know, and that bulletin of the atomic scientists, which revealed that, they say humanity stands 100 seconds from, you know, from a termination, a midnight of termination of life on Earth. And at the same time,
that ocean
of darkness, there's an ocean of light.
Yeah. Say that statistic again, about how many seconds from midnight?
The bulletin of the atomic scientists, which was started by the scientists who had helped create the nuclear bomb, started way back in 1945 or seven. And every year they talk about how close we are to extinction. And we were 7 minutes away. Now we're 100 seconds away from extinction of life on Earth. And what is the answer? To run around and panic? Well, actually, it turns out that that panic immobilizes us. And it was immobilizing me. And when I thought back to that George Fox song, I said, you know, simultaneously with that ocean of darkness, there is an incredible ocean of light all over the world. People are reaching out to help other people. People are loving their families. There's flowers blooming. There's the ocean waves coming in. There's animal, you know, we see all these YouTubes of animals that are supposed to hate each other, all learning how to love each other. And, you know, and we're seeing just so much manifestation of an incredible coming together of humanity, you know, the whole network of the web, where we're coming together and creating almost like a global brain, an interactive neural network of the planet. And we see such incredible, amazing things going on. And, you know, and then I started thinking, well, okay, I can dwell in that dark ocean of darkness, and I can drown, and I can be immobilized, or I can just make a conscious choice. I'm going to choose to dwell in that ocean of light. Now, you know, I'll tell you what, I figured, well, if it turns out I'm wrong and we dwell in the ocean of light and we visualize it, well, there'll be no one left to say I told you so, so I can't lose. So, and if we do that, then I think there's a glimmer of hope that we can actually save humanity. If we can escape from that ocean of darkness and we can dwell and live and visualize how we create a world that works. If I could create movies that would take kids each week, say there's a Netflix series where, or a program like Star Trek or others, but where, you know, each week you dwell in visualizing a future that works, where humanity's come together, where humanity's created this people-powered planet, where we can start creating a vision, not of all the horror. I mean, you go around and you look at the movies that we're deluged with day after day. It's like one after another of devastating, destructive views of the future, a future that's just horrendous that no one would want to live in. And kids are living in that and dwelling in it and playing the games and playing all the computer games, killing and murdering and maiming each other. And then we wonder if our visions create a reality, and that's the visions that we're feeding our society. And then we start wondering, well, why aren't we able to fix this and get onto a positive plane? We have to say a key part of it is that we're visualizing the wrong thing, folks. We've got to start envisioning the world we want. We've got to start dwelling in it and living in it and feeling it, just like you were talking about. We've got to be in that conscious manifestation. We've got to be feeling, sensing. We are in that incredible positive future where we, the people, are coming together as a planet. And we have to experience it so viscerally real, so, you know, seeing it played out with all the emotions and drama, where it starts imprinting that into our subconsciousness and imprinting that into the cosmic field and imprinting that into, you know, the whole cosmology of the kind of thing you're talking about, where we create something different than the path we've been on before. And this is vital. I mean, folks, this is our final test. We're either going to find a way to create and empower that vision, or, you know, this could be it. So this is our final test as a human race to really come together now. Sorry to just go on and on, but
I just wanted to get
a little bit of the vision out there, and we can talk some more.
and you know, Arthur, I love the words of that song that you were singing, which I had never heard before. And this concept of being the light, you know, that this is something that spiritual teachers have been talking about for thousands of years. And yet, one of the things I find so interesting is that scientists have been able to measure the light around humans and other living beings. And in fact, I've been part of some experiments, various universities, including St. Petersburg University, Konstantin Korotkov, where you basically get into this healing framework, healing mode, and see how it affects our light. And so in some sense, it's this philosophy, it's this thing that we can't really put our finger on. And yet when you see these experiments of us creating more light, you know that it's got to have an effect on the world. So the question becomes, how do we as individuals come together collectively, creating more and more of that light?
Right, exactly. That is the key question. And that's why I'm so happy to be on your show, because you're part of creating that light. And so often it seems like many, many of these teachers have focused on how we raise that light inside. And that's, of course, the first step. But I think it's time to help move the teachers forward to visualize it for us all as a planet. I mean, we've got to start teaching and learning and understanding how we create the vision that's going to lift humanity out of this doom. That's going to, you know, it's going to be like what Bucky Fuller said. He said, you never solve a problem, by fighting the old model. You've got to create a new model and just drag people toward it. And Einstein said the same thing. He said, you can never solve a problem inside the system that created it. You have to step outside of it. And that's what excited me about Gary's story. And that is that here we've been like knocking our heads against the wall, begging and pleading our government leaders to make peace, protesting this, protesting that, please fix this, please fix that. And Gary suddenly came to the amazing click realization, Gary Davis, the subject of our movie, that, hey, wait a minute, folks. The Declaration of Independence says it is the right of the people to institute new government. Almost every constitution says it's based on the will of the people. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that the basis of government shall be the will of the people. And Gary said, well, wait a minute. Why, if these guys are just working for us, why are we trying to fix things inside this broken nation state system? These aren't really real. You look at our planet, there's none of these lines drawn. You know, there are natural things, but these lines drawn on the map, somebody got a map, they drew lines, now you are against you, and now you two fight each other, you know, like India and Pakistan. They weren't, you know, there wasn't a line, they just, now you guys fight each other, we drew a line on a map. Do we realize how insane that is to be stuck? You know, we've got this border between Mexico and the U.S. and all these people dying, being put in cages, millions of kids being, all these things for some invisible line, that's something that doesn't even exist, it's something we cooked up. It's a crazy system. So when we go back and we say, well, wait a minute, if we the people are the sovereigns, if we create government, Gary said, well, then why don't we, you know, create a government of, by, and for the people of the world? Now, have you seen our film, The World Is My Country?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And it's very inspiring. And as I was saying earlier, before you came on, it's something that I had never heard about. It's history that I missed because of the time that I was born, but it was not history that was taught to me in school. It wasn't in anything that I'd read before. So I was fascinated by this amazing story. And I also love how much coverage he got with mm-hmm. the news and the newsreels of what he was doing. And can you tell us a little bit about Gary's story?
Yeah. Okay. So here Gary is, I mean, he's you know, this young guy on his way to a Broadway career. His father's this big musician playing for 11 different presidents, the Meyer Davis Band, and his whole family. They're involved in the showbiz with showbiz greats coming to their home and so on. And, you know, his big dream is to make people laugh. And he gets into a big Broadway show with Danny Kaye and with Cole Porter doing the music, a film called Let's Face It. The producer says to him, you know, well, nobody can do Danny when Gary asked to be the understudy. And he said, well, just the rehearsals, you know, the other actors need someone to throw their lines out with. So he gets this job. And 2 years later, Danny gets laryngitis. And Gary says, I can do it. Well, they've either got to refund all the tickets or let him go try. So they let him go on stage and he wows them. The audience can't believe it. This young kid, you know, he got in the chorus when he was 20, 22 years old. He's doing Danny's rapid double fire numbers. He gets 13 curtain calls. He's on his way to a Broadway career. You know, he gets offers of another show, CBS, early television, just getting started. They were offering him, you know, to come on a show there at the beginnings of television. And then, boom, World War II comes along. And he finds himself in a bomber plane being ordered to bomb the city of Brandenburg. And his own brother has just gotten killed, and his heart is broken. I mean, my God, why weren't the people who killed my brother, why weren't they arrested? You know, this is crazy.
And his brother was killed in war. His brother was killed in World War II.
Absolutely, in the war. And why wasn't I arrested for bombing these people in their homes and schools and factories just because they're on the wrong side of some invisible line? I can't even see it from my airplane. And suddenly I'm supposed to just blow all these people up. This is something crazy. And he gets back from the war and, you know, his friends are all partying again. And he's very depressed. They said, Gary's not funny anymore. And then he sees the footage of Hiroshima and he says, what if I'm recalled to bomb Moscow now? I'm still in the active reserves. I mean, this would be the end of life on Earth. This is crazy. I've got to do something. But what can I do? I'm just an actor. So what he ends up doing, and you'll have to see the movie to catch this, go to theworldismycountry.com. But he goes to Paris, where the UN had its early meetings before it was built on the East River. And as an actor, he pulls off this grand act of political theater. He leaps up in the middle of the session, of the UN, the United Nations session, and he says, the nations you represent divide us and lead us to the brink of total war. He said, what we need is one government for one world. And if you won't do it, step aside and a people's world assembly will arise from our ranks to do it. He said, it's we the people, you know, who've got to do that. So actually, you'll see, as you see in the film, delegates actually applaud him. But of course, he's hauled off. And this ignites war-weary Europe. People are so excited because, you know, they're still in the ruins of the war. And here's somebody who's got a clue of what we can do. And it turned out 20,000 people rally with him at the Velodrome. This is like the Madison Square Garden of Paris. It's just huge, huge stadium where they have the big bicycle races and so on.
And this is before the internet. I mean, this is when getting the word out took, you know, people on foot to go post signs on street corners, you know?
Well, what they did, you know, they announced the meeting at this huge velodrome 1 week away. They rented the hall 1 week away. But this time, by the way, all the top French intellectuals had joined them, Albert Camus, Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, and all these famous people had joined them. So that was bringing publicity to it. But meanwhile, what they were doing, and you see in the film, you know, they went out to the street corner at Place Trocadero. They were throwing flyers in the air. They were releasing balloons. Anyway, with no internet, they get 20,000 people rallying there at the Velodrome in 1 week's notice. I mean, you know, it's pretty phenomenal when you think about it. So anyway, you see this right in the film. I mean, there's incredible historic footage of every step in his journey. Well, 20,000 people are demanding the UN, this new United Nations has just been created. Eleanor Roosevelt has proposed this Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The Soviets are saying, yet this is an intolerable intrusion on our national security, on our internal affairs. You know, you're telling us how we should do things internally, and then you're ignoring your own crimes with the segregation of the South, whatever. You know, they're throwing back barbs back and forth. He ends up sparking this incredible movement of people around the world, not just there in Paris, but supporting rallies in Germany and other places. And this is December 9th, 1948. The very next day, December 10th, the Soviets step aside, abstain, and let the Universal Declaration of Human Rights get passed unanimously. This is a fundamental document of world law. And as Gary says in the film, we'll never know why, but on December 9th, we took over. We the people demanded that we demand our rights. Well, this actually had a big impact in our film. Barbara Mueller, whose husband was part of the key part of the UN, said that Gary inspired you know, the leaders of the European Union. And we saw how inside Europe, after they had these two terrible wars in countries that had killed each other's families and back and forth and horrible, horrible things, they actually created a union. And once they did, in the 75 years since that, whatever problems it might have, that union was created, there's not been a single war by one of the member nations against another. There's been civil wars, as Gary says in the film. You know, you might have two sovereignties, two governments claiming the same territory. But if everyone accepts one governing system, then we have a way to take our disputes to court. We have a way to use world law instead of battling it out on the battlefield. And so that did have an impact there. It had an impact on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And as you said, it's an incredible story for us today, because as Martin Sheen says in the intro, it really is a roadmap to a better future. Once we start thinking of ourselves as world citizens, the seemingly intractable problems that are totally unsolvable suddenly become eminently solvable, and we can see our way into that ocean of light.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, the film is so inspirational, and I love the fact that there are all these people who signed up as world citizens. Like, people, probably today, people want peace. People want some sense of unity. People want the freedom to travel from one country to another. And yet there's a part of me, let me play devil's advocate here. This concept of one government both inspires me and it also scares me, because I see that it's a double-edged sword. You can, just looking within the United States and looking at the corruption, the money that is behind the politics, and looking at what some of the high-level people have come together from around the world to make plans for humanity, it's like, how do we create such a world where we have one government, where there's a law that, you know, war is not allowed, and not have it corrupt, not have it controlling the people, but rather allowing the sovereignty of the people to live their lives?
Now, that is the key question that Gary dealt with for decades of his life. And that is that he says right in the film, he says, does world government scare you? Well, it does me, if it's the same old forces of power and money controlling our lives from behind closed doors. He says, but what if we run it? What if we find out how to interactively do that? And that's really the key. Look at it. We have no say at the global level. You can't elect. You can't. You have no way to choose any officials. You have no way to do anything at the global level. It's all these nation states behind closed doors, and they make these treaties, these trade treaties that can actually punish governments for taking environmental moves because they cut into the profit of these companies. In other words, see, what's happened, folks, is back in Thomas Jefferson's day, corporations were created under the people. They were given like a 20-year charter to build a railroad or do some particular public good. But because we, the people, are locked in these boxes called nation states, and they were free to operate globally, they began to say, well, if you cut off our charter, if you tax us, we'll move abroad. If you try to clean up our pollution, we'll move abroad. So suddenly they moved up above the people, and they got all the power and money, and they hire the best politicians money can buy. And we, the people, are left with a fragment, a shell, an illusion of democracy, but we don't have democracy. We don't get to choose it. And what happens is you have, like, for instance, nobody in the U.S. said, we want a whole new generation of nuclear weapons, and we want a multi-billion-dollar campaign to build new nukes. That didn't happen. Not a single person voted for that, thought of that. But these corporations thought that'd be great for their budget, and now they're whipping up a new Cold War with China and Russia because that keeps the weapons flowing. And, you know, folks, this is they're playing with the extinction of humanity, which means them too, but they're stuck. They don't necessarily believe in this. They're stuck in a broken system too, that, you know, well, we do it because we can do it. You know, well, we can get away with manipulating Congress and getting this bill through and getting all this money. Well, may not be good for the planet, but the hell with it. We've got to, you know, we have to. In fact, it's the law. It's the bottom line. We have to serve our stockholders. Now they're even claiming like corporations have rights as people. I mean, it's just the most insane thing in the world that we've created this monster in our midst that we can't even control. So what we have to do is step back, folks, and switch back to that ocean of light and do that thing where we realize that we, the people, are, we are the powerful, we're the powerful sources of this shift in the world. We are the sovereigns. We're the ones who have to create this better world. And we can't do it by fighting that old system. We can't do it by begging and pleading or lobbying Congress or doing that. We just have to invent, you know, Gary shows in our film, he says a new thing. We'll just have this like smart gov app where what we'll do is we'll have, just like we're having these Zoom meetings. You want me to go into a little bit more about his synergistic sure. idea?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, his idea was, before the internet even, he hired this Bucky Fuller disciple who helped develop this synergistic system of governance. And if you take, this is how it works, basically. If you take, you know that geodesic sphere, you've seen that geodesic dome that Bucky Fuller yeah. created, and you'd have a sphere of that same kind of triangular thing. Well, if you take the old organization chart, here you had the president on top or the king on top, and then you have everybody else underneath. If you change that into this geodesic sphere, and say you start with a company. Okay, here we have a company. Well, yes, the you're in outer space, so all ways are up, whichever way you rotate it. So if the president of the company, yes, he's on top when it comes to administration, coordinating everything, getting it working. But the janitor is on top of the world when it comes to keeping the bathrooms clean. If the bathrooms are all overflowing and they're stinking like crazy, the whole office shuts down. Nobody can do business unless he does that. So he's on top of the world. But he can't do that unless he's getting toilet paper and supplies from supply. Well, they can't do that unless payroll's working. In other words, every single part of this thing is on top of the world and everybody has a say. And if you take this new system, this system of organization, and you take these Zoom meetings, and say you had, say we're having this Zoom meeting, but it's crossing political boundaries. You know, if you take like Trump supporters and their opponents, or you take Arabs and Israelis or any other thing, and you start bringing people together, well, you, there's so many films, programs that have been done, things from revolutionary conversations and creative, oh, there's a million different ways of integrative, bringing together people from opposite sides in ways where you don't say, okay, who's right, who's wrong, but you say, okay, what is it, what is it, what's your basic story? What is it you really want in life? You hear each other, you get a vision, and you start finding that all over the world, people want a better life for their children, they want to feel safe and secure, they want to feel like they're making a difference, they want to feel like they have some impact in the world. You know, people have common, they want to feel they're part of a group, they want to feel that they're that they're contributing something, you know, and you start getting to these basic concepts and you start coming together and you ask the question, not, who's right or who's wrong about this, but what's the vision of what we want, as you were talking about? Well, we all want clean air. Is there anybody here who wants a lot of smoke in the air and to be suffering and coughing on it? Oh, nobody, you sure? Nobody wants that. No, we all want clean air. Well, but we want prosperity at the same time. Well, so we want to be able to have these goods and stuff that create that. Well, what if we can create these goods in some other way where, what if they have a whole system life cycle to them? So we don't have to throw them all in the dump. Do we want to throw stuff in the dump or do we just want to be able to have improved things? So in other words, if you start getting to what we really want, you start finding there's ways we can all come together, folks. We can create the vision of what we want. We can do what we want. I mean, right now, the vast majority of nations on the earth have passed this ban on nuclear weapons. It's actually international law now. The only people who've held out are like 5 or 7 states that have nuclear weapons, and that's because the lobbies for the nuclear industries are so powerful in their nation. Those nations didn't vote either that they wanted one of these nukes. It's only these lobbies in those 7 countries that have held up against this treaty. So, you know, once you ask people, what is it you really want, like in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, there is people all the world, unanimously, all the nations wanted that. They wanted human rights for people. First, you know, there were some divisions. Like I said, the Soviets had to abstain at that point. But even they contributed a lot to it because they wanted economic rights. They said, you're talking about human rights, but you're ignoring economic rights. So they got that part into the Universal Declaration. So, you know, it's a dynamic process where if we the people step back and create laws, not laws that are enforced by guns and bombs, but enforced by our people power. You know, you have this SmartGov app in your phone. You know, you walk into the store, you scan product. Oh, beep, beep, this is a world law violator. Oop, beep, beep, this company is providing the raw materials to Union Carbide that's making nuclear weapons, and they've been ordered to cease and desist by the people's court. So that they're illegal, we're not going to buy their product. Or you go to apply on your computer, you get onto a job website. Oh, yeah, you've subscribed to the World Citizen app, and it pops up on your computer. Beep, beep, you know, world law violator. Oh, I'm not going to apply for a job there. And, you know, and then we start, you know, shippers will stop shipping stuff that's violating international law, and unions refuse to offload the boats. And, you know, in other words, all these things that are being done in the world that are threatening us are being done with our tax dollars. It's being done with our assent. And if we divest, you know, we go to our pension funds and everything, and we say, well, we're not going to keep our money in this pension fund if it's going to be investing in General Dynamics and these companies making nuclear weapons and threatening the life of humanity and are violating international law. So pretty soon, these same companies that have been violating the law are going to start putting out ad campaigns. Oh, we're all for world law. We're making a better world for people. We do ecological products. I mean, they're going to go where we the people go. We the people have to step up to the plate and take back our power as citizens of this world. And if we leave it in the hands of the financial interests that are stuck in this old mode, we're out of luck. But if we break out of that nation state thinking and see of ourselves as not the governed, but the governors of our small planet, then we the people do have the power to change our world and to build a better future for all of us. Mm. And you know, I think that's the message I got from working for years with Gary over a quarter of a century.
And it's a very inspirational and powerful message. And the thing that comes up for me, though, is, you know, over the last year, I've seen such censorship, you know, relating to the pandemic. And there's one narrative that is pushed. And when you look at, you know, who basically owns the media and the companies that are supporting the media, it affects the narrative. So how do we do this in a way that keeps the truth evident for those of us as citizens of the world, without it getting polluted by corporate interests or, you know, the powers that be that like to see the divisiveness, that like to see the war because there's money in it? How do we find our way to that truth and keep it clean?
Well, that's a big challenge, and we the humans have to come together and do it. And, you know, I think a key part of that is that we have to just be aware and alert of what you're saying. And we have to engage in dialogue and conversation. I mean, just like the kind of conversation we're having and the world is starting to have as we learn that we can, you know, use this powerful media where we can now reach across the borders that divide us and get people from opposite sides talking to each other. We can sometimes crack beyond the, like there was a campaign in Israel at one point when Israel and Iran were about to go to war. One of these other times, these people in Israel started this "We Love Iran" campaign. It started going viral and made it very hard for them to start the bombing at that point when they had that counter force. Now, of course, then other forces come back. A lot of money is being made. There's a very interesting article about all the incredible amount of money being made on the bombs that went into bombing Gaza and the corporations. I think it's in either the Post or the New York Times or the Washington Post. There's a big article about those companies that I think it's the Times. Those companies that are profiting from that bombing going on there. But there, even those people who are doing it, you know, if you can get to their kids and their grandkids and get them talking to their presidents, you know, do we really want to be making our money this way? And at some point, you don't have to even necessarily convince them. You just have to withdraw, just make it no longer profitable. It's no longer profitable to be making instruments that are going to end life on the earth. I mean, it's the most, you know... The definition of insanity is when you keep doing something that hasn't worked and you do it over and over again and you think it's going to work. Since World War II, the United States has fought in numerous wars, Afghanistan, Iran, Vietnam. We haven't won a single one of them. Here we are, the most powerful nation on earth, the U.S., the most powerful nation on the earth, more weapons and money going to military than the other half of the world combined. Bases, military bases all over the world, and we're scared to death. We're no safer. We can't win wars. It doesn't work, folks. Wars don't work. Every time you fight a war, you make more enemies. You make more people hate you. The only thing that you do is you help create a self-generating business. You're sure there's going to be plenty more business for the gun manufacturers because people are going to hate you. They're all going to get the weapons. They're going to want to acquire them. It may be an effective business model if you don't have to live on the planet after you've created it. But it's definitely not going to, even though it may be a growth industry, sadly, it's not sustainable, and it's going to be the end of all of us. So we have to be able to step out and break out of that. And I think the only way to do it is starting with what you're doing, talking to people, learning how to visualize it, learning how to center, and learning how to shift our thinking to creating that vision of the world we want.
Yeah. And one of the things that comes up for me is that, for a long time, I bought into some of these concepts of us versus them, and less so with our country versus other countries. I've traveled to various other countries in the world, and I feel a deep connection to some of the other cultures. And when you get into other countries and you realize, even though the culture is very different, people are people, Right. And but the things that divide us and are actually encouraged in some ways in social media, the difference in political perspective, the difference in medical perspective, the difference in, skin color. And, it's like, it's mind boggling and it's gotten to be really ugly. And I keep asking myself, so who benefits from this? This divisiveness, it certainly doesn't benefit the individuals who are engaging in it, right? It certainly doesn't benefit, us as people. Who's benefiting from the divisiveness?
Well, it's very interesting because some of the same people who have funded divisiveness and one group hating another group have funded it across in the different cultures where it's a different group hating a different group, and you go back and you start realizing, the whole thing that was happening with, Cambridge Analytics and so on, where they were like manipulating various governments in favor of bringing down governments that were democratic and representing what the people wanted and trying to make things better for the lives of people and bringing in economic interests that were more amenable to the corporations. I mean, if you look at it throughout Latin America, why do we have so many refugees trying to get here? Because we've destabilized and undermined democratic governments that are making things better for their people, that are turning it around. And we've done it in the name of democracy, which is so ironic because we've been overthrowing democratically elected presidents from, I remember Salvador Allende and what an incredibly positive thing he was doing. And he was actually working with the Bucky Fuller disciples too to create a more interactive way that people could be involved in governance and doing just great things. And then, AT&T didn't like that he was confiscating their land or other places. It wasn't theirs, really. I mean, like, for instance, they've taken, countries that have taken land that's not even being used by United Fruit or somebody else on the fallow land and said, okay, farmers can farm there. And then they get overthrown for that. They've the government of the U.S. sadly found itself henchmen to forced companies. There's an incredible documentary about how with the AIDS epidemic in Africa, and people badly needed these medicines, and India and other places were going to make it for them free. And then the U.S. played a role to try to intervene to say we have to enforce the copyrights of our corporations. What business is it for the U.S. government to be doing that? People of the world don't want to enforce that copyright and keep people from having vital aid medicine. That's not who we are. That's not who America is. America has been kind of a but it's captured. It's not just America. It happens in all these countries, in Russia and in China. It's this broken nation state system that is a race to the bottom. And the whole way we've created like win-lose democracy, that was a great advance back in 1776, you know, when you could send a send someone by horse and buggy to a distant city to do your governing. Now, as Gary says in the movie, we can all meet in the same room, the global room, and we don't have to be trying to just reenact the old ideas of what democracy is. Everywhere else in our society, we invented new things. He says, let's use this incredible genius of humanity to invent a whole new way we govern, a whole new way we create laws that are bringing to the top the highest and best wisdom of each individual and amalgamating that into the wisdom of the whole, the sovereignty of the whole, and not a system. I remember one film of many where Arab and Israeli students at NYU were at loggerheads. We're right, you're right, we're right, you're right. And then Katrina happened, and they all got on the bus to go help with Katrina. They started saying, well, hey, you're okay. I wish all Jews were like you. I wish all Arabs were like you, you know. And there's another wonderful movie called Free Trip to Egypt. This fellow goes to Trump rallies, and he holds up signs saying, free trip to Egypt. And he got some takers, and he took them over there. And, of course, the same thing happened. They live with Muslim families, and they wish all Muslims were as wonderful as you are. And they become like family. You know that. You've traveled countries. It happened to me when I was in high school, when I went to the Soviet Union here in the height of the Cold War, 1964, and we're getting ready to, you know, blow up the world to fight this evil empire. And I go over there, and everybody wants to know, where can I get blue jeans like those? Where can I get some Beatles records and music? And I said, hey, we're going to blow up the world to fight these people, and all they want is our music and blue jeans.
It puts it in perspective, doesn't it? You know, Arthur, we're running out of time here. Again, how do people get access to watching this wonderful movie?
Yeah, so go to theworldismycountry.com. Don't forget the theworldismycountry.com, and there you'll see where you can click on. It's on public television stations coast to coast. You'll see it's also a pay-per-view right there. You'll see Martin Sheen promoting it on Extra TV, and he's coming up on MSNBC, a promotion on it on the 14th. It's going to be at World Unity Week. Many of you can join us on June 24th and watch it free on World Unity Week. And that'll be on a page when you click on the worldismycountry.com. You'll see how you can watch it there. So, you can either watch it free or please pay for it a little bit, because we can use the money. We did this all out of by the seat of our pants. We didn't have any corporate or other funding, and we need you to. So if you can just go ahead and rent it online there and watch it, that'd be great too. Or wait for the free showing on the 24th and join the World Unity Week. Yes, please do watch the movie. Please fill out the survey at the end and let us know what you think of it. We really want to know. And when you do that, you'll get to hear more about our regular People Powered Planet podcast, where we bring in wonderful guests who are talking about how do we create that positive alternative vision? How do we create that idea of how the world should work and could work?
We've run out of time, Arthur. It's been a joy talking to you. I love the movie.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.